Good morning. It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. A jam-packed sports weekend for you. Lots of couch time.
That was a hell of a weekend. Were you slugging it?
Big time slugging it. Worth it. I think that when I wrapped up my viewing experience yesterday and I started to think about the show, we're getting into prime sports watching time of the year. We're tiptoeing into it.
So things are pretty, like, it's a bit depressing after the Super Bowl. NFL gone. Sundays now wide open, but also frustratingly wide open. It's just like, what am I going to do with these days here? And then it just ramps up again. Mm-hmm. Once you get to March, it ramps up again with March Madness.
Golf's back.
Are a little bit more into golf because we got a little thing going on, but also the Masters here. And it's just
F1's back on
jam-packed.
Your Sundays too.
I mean, I'm not going to be dabbling F1. I can't.
Hey,
I can't.
It's a great day to kick off.
Did you fit that into the schedule?
Even if I'm not sitting there consuming it all, flick it on early Sunday morning or making breakfast, you know it's there. It starts off your Sunday viewing experience that now has sports.
Mm-hmm.
It gets you geared up.
Good pun.
Nice. I'm on it this morning.
That's a really good start for you.
Writing those out.
Really good.
But no, it feels like we're tiptoeing into prime TV sports watching. We got the playoffs around the corner. Obviously, March Madness is in full swing. We got the Sweet 16 lined up. And then we've got both major league NHL and NBA headed to playoffs. Spring training is wrapping up. Mm-hmm. Regular season's about to start for Blue Jays and MLB. It's like we're just right in the sweet spot. Major golf tournaments are coming. F1 starting. We're pretty much there.
Yeah, we are definitely in the sweet spot. April, for me, nothing compares to April. April's the best. Masters, and then into playoff mode where it's just like all day, every day. Nothing tops April for me, but March is pretty good. And this past weekend was pretty good. So I'll ask you, what was the favorite thing that you watched this weekend?
God, that's tough because I felt like I could pick something from each sport, each major sport.
You got to choose.
I'm going to go off the board.
I'm going off the board, too.
World Baseball Classic.
Yes.
Honestly,
I'm a World Baseball Classic guy now.
After last week, you said you couldn't even watch it.
Well, see, this is the thing. With Canada, it was this like kind of this dread, this responsibility to cheer for Canada, knowing that they really can't measure up. Mm-hmm. Once we got rid of Canada, I got to be honest, this thing took off.
Okay, so USA-Venezuela might have been one of the best things I've watched all calendar year.
It's the best thing from the weekend, for sure.
It was electric. I watched that thinking, that's what best on best competition is like.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to make this into, I wish that Canada and the United States got to play more best on best hockey, but...
We're not going to, but yes.
But yeah, I thought about that a little bit, but that was pride to represent your country. It meant something to everyone out there. USA six outs from elimination after blowing this three-run lead in the fifth inning.
Mm-hmm.
Trey Turner looks like the best baseball player to ever play the game all of a sudden.
Unless he's gotten an at-bat since his last home run. Three at-bats in his last five at-bats.
Last night he also went off.
That's what I mean. And since the last home run, because he hit two home runs last night. If he had another one, it's 3-for-6, whatever. But in a stretch of five at-bats, three
Unreal.
Home runs, 8 RBI for Trey Turner.
An eighth inning grand slam to rally USA to win. The USA players and management post-game saying that that was as good of an atmosphere as the World Series. And I don't doubt it because it was honestly so enjoyable to watch. And yeah, last week we kind of said, oh, what's the World Baseball Classic mean to us? You know, we saw some injuries and then Canada was out and I didn't really know what our expectations were coming in, but
it's been playing in two different continents. Like we got something going on in Asia that we're not watching at all because it's right in the morning.
Yeah.
Like we can't even get up in time to watch
it. That game was amazing.
That game and the crowd too. Like
exactly.
A 50-50 split in the crowd with so much representation from Puerto Rico or Venezuela or Mexico or the United States, wherever it is coming from. And it was just a lively atmosphere and everything that went like, the drama that you got from Trey Turner turning a two-run deficit
sick.
In the eighth inning, USA on the ropes into a two-run lead that they eventually were able to protect and go on to the semifinal, which they've already taken care of business in the semifinal, winning last night against Cuba. I mean, that was the one disappointing. That was the one low point from the weekend at the World Baseball
Classic.
Too
easy of a win.
It was too easy for the United States over Cuba, and they're going to go on to the final to face either Japan or Mexico. But even Friday night, it cost us the wake and rake. So that's probably why I was so dialed in on it.
It was a tough one.
That might have been like the hardest wake and rake loss that I've like stomached for myself. Mm. Because I thought when we put together that parlay, I was just like, that's a winner. That is a beautiful parlay. I don't know where you're getting. If this is all coming off the
Shout
top of your
to
head.
D as well.
Kennesaw State was awesome. Should have won the game. Mm. They were awesome. And then Joel Embiid just goes crazy again.
Our narrative pick.
And gets over 51.5. We got to watch that. We got to just be playing Joel Embiid for the rest of the rest of the 2 weeks we got here. And I was so pumped for Puerto Rico going up 3-0. And I was just like living and dying with that game. And that game was amazing. The emotion in that game. Randy Arozarena was unbelievable for Mexico. After the game, he's from Cuba, defected mm-hmm. from Cuba, saying openly he's cheering for Cuba to beat the United States so he can beat Cuba himself with Mexico in the final. Like, unbelievable stuff going on. The narratives, the storylines, the performances, the crowd, everything that's gone in the World Baseball Classic over the last couple of days has been awesome.
It has been surprisingly the best TV that I've watched over the last stretch. Yeah, Leafs won both games. Raptors split the weekend. Blue Jays in spring training, F1,
a zillion TFC, March Madness,
which the upsets were outstanding. But man, that World Baseball Classic has taken a piece of my heart, and they're running with it.
Mm-hmm. And I'm glad we're on the same. Well, I was expecting you to not be on that team. I thought you were going to be rolling Princeton or
no, man,
something else for the weekend.
That was absolutely incredible.
It was insane.
So we've got a game tonight to solidify who's in the final. USA obviously going to be.
And here's another thing. I've been waiting forever to watch Japan. I'm just like curious about Japan.
Yes, come to our time zone, please.
Japan has been just sitting around waiting for the last week. They eventually got over here mm-hmm. to Miami, but they haven't played since they got over here. And I'm just waiting for it. I just want to see it. I want to see what it looks like. I want to see how Japan stacks up against the United States if they get there. But they got to go through Mexico first, and they look incredible or have looked incredible. So
Mexico versus Japan, 7 p.m. tonight. I have now successfully lost our bet.
Successfully lost.
It's a nice spin for me. Mm-hmm. Successfully lost.
Just
it.
put a success on, preface everything with successfully.
Big fat L.
Yeah, big fat 100% L. So you're going to be diving into the ancestral diet?
Yes.
Can you do that before I leave? I'm going on a little vacation.
I'll do
Friday.
It this week for you.
A little Thursday send-off?
So
you're eating a beef heart?
When will the final be played? If tonight's the semi,
they're rolling through quickly here. The final's tomorrow. They're doing like one game
before Friday. I will eat either raw liver or beef heart, and I think I'm gonna go with liver. And I lost the bet, so I'll do it, and we'll stream it, and we'll let the viewers watch. But can we not do it at 9 a.m can we like push it a little? Like, I don't want it for breakfast. Like, can I not do it at noon?
I gotta be here. No,
I just feel like it's even worse to eat it at 9 a.m. But okay, I'll do it. Sure.
You should do it later in the show just in case, like.
No, I'm going to do it after the show.
Yeah.
I'm not doing it.
You don't want to do live on the air?
No, because it's a terrible listening experience.
Pop it in right before we go to the
brutal listening experience and be like, Ailish is chewing liver. She looks like she hates it.
Yeah, you're right. I probably wouldn't be able to carry
this. I'll do it one of these days this week after we get off the show because I lost and I'm not a sore loser, so. That was the best thing I watched this weekend. There are a lot of great viewing experiences. I mean, obviously, March Madness upsets were incredible. The Valspar Championship lost in the grasp of my hands. It fell through my fingertips.
You're definitely
Buddy,
hot on
I'm
your
dialed
golf picks.
Right now.
I can't
Jordan
even.
Jordan Spieth blew it, though. And on 17, like, he needed that birdie putt. And the commentators were like, "He really blew that one." I'm like, "Yeah, you think?"
Did
like,
you say that? I missed God. It. I had to turn it off.
Oh, it was tough.
I was the biggest Adam Schenk fan going for a little bit there.
Me too, because what's his nickname?
I don't know. What is it?
Adam Schenk's nickname is Bunker.
Oh, really?
His caddy has Bunker on his back.
Okay,
and I thought, well, I'm kind of cheering for both of these guys at this point.
And then they both lost.
Yeah, it was tough.
Taylor Moore from
I thought I'm going to go back to back with my outright golf picks.
Would have been a hell of a start. You still have a $1,000 lead, though, so congratulations
but
to you.
I did
You've successfully held your lead in the FanEx Cup standings.
All right, there you go. I do, when I like to bet golf, you can do the first place finish or top five, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I did at least get a little sprinkle from my Spieth picks. But even Sam Burns, he made some noise.
He came on.
Had a good weekend with that. Any other of your favorite viewing experiences?
Ooh, what else did I enjoy? I was thinking about this because I was just like, ask the question, might as well have a good answer. Although, right when I saw Trey Turner hit that Grand Slam, I was like, oh, this is the moment of the weekend for me.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't all that captivated by March Madness.
Sorry, a number one team being upset doesn't do it for you?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, it's a lot of basketball over a long period of time, so I wasn't dialed into every moment, and I felt like I missed the best moments. Because I can't devote 40 hours to the couch or whatever you need, right? So I'm getting a lot of it in, and I felt like everything I'm watching, I'm like watching like my bets lose slowly, and I'm like, what am I doing here? This is not going well. And finally, I had a good beat last night, but I was home and cool in bed like long ago because TCU hit. Did you see that ending to TCU and Gonzaga?
Gonzaga still won,
and they were up 7.
TCU to cover.
Yeah, just a greasiest backdoor calf cover of all time. But they were down 7, and the game's over. The guy rolls it up, just picks it up and chucks a half quarter to cover.
That made a lot of people
and, like,
happy.
If I saw that happening, it would have been like my weekend. Oh, that's my weekend. I'm okay with losing the bets that I lost because that just happened. But I felt like I didn't get to experience the wins, but I experienced all the losses.
Okay,
and that probably is painting my experience. But you know where I'm at on Cinderella. Cinderella early. Now when we're looking at the bracket, I'm like, do we really need Cinderella? Do we need FAU involved right now? Do we need Princeton right now?
Wow, you hate fun.
I just want to see when it gets down to the brass tacks, which we're at here, with only 16 teams remaining. We're in the Sweet 16. Mm-hmm. There's a couple like layup matchups, and it just feels like there's only a couple good teams left.
I love the Cinderella story. And one of the best / worst viewing experiences I've had was watching Purdue lose that game. The second number one seed ever to lose in the round of 64. I don't even know. And I almost want Dee to come on here and try to explain to me what happened at the end of that game with poor Zach Edey, who might be the last time we ever see him in a Purdue jersey. I don't think he attempted a shot for like the last 8 minutes. Dee, he's getting the mic ready. That was brutal viewing experience. And I want to know, because D took Friday off, and he's a big basketball guy. I want to know what consuming the Purdue loss was like for you, D. I know you're getting your headset on.
So, interesting. It wasn't overly... It was surprising, but not shocking.
Mm.
Because styles make fights, and the Fairleigh Dickinson program and the way that they play is exactly what Purdue is not good at. And... That's why I didn't expect it to happen there, obviously, but I wasn't overly surprised when I saw the game plan. What shocked me more was that Purdue and Matt Painter, like, to me, that was a coaching loss more than it was
on
the players.
Big time.
So that's why I was very much in the camp of, like, that one falls on Matt Painter in this situation.
Yeah, now he's lost in 3 straight years to a 13. Oh, you can't hear me? He's lost... to a 13, a 15, and a 16 seed in the last 3 years. Like, this guy's got to go.
Well,
he didn't make any adjustments.
Ayla's coming for jobs here.
No, I agree. He didn't make any adjustments. That's part of the problem in all this. What I don't understand is, and this is what I think the first time I've ever said it where I pointed at a coach and said, that's on you. Because I think a lot of it is, hey, you know what? Sometimes you don't make shots. Sometimes you have an off day. That was firmly on him because you had all week to know what they're going to do. They're
That's
the smallest team in college basketball. They're going to press you because they know you can't handle the press. His press break was he had no press break.
Mm-hmm.
I'm watching that and I'm like, your poor point guard Braden Smith, who's a freshman, turned it over 7 times and you just left him hanging out to dry the whole game and you didn't change anything. And then what are they doing in the post? They're fronting and they're doubling Zach Edey. So they're
poor guy was like, he couldn't even move. And these guys are so little, though. It didn't make any sense to me. Zach Edey's like 9'2". He was towering over these kids. And I watched, my jaw was ajar, thinking this might be the worst performance I've seen from a number one seed. They're a bunch of frauds.
I'll be honest, I didn't watch the game. I just heard like he wasn't taking any shots down the stretch.
Well, he couldn't really either. Like, it just, there was nothing. I just watched this slip away.
But if he has the size advantage, even if he's double teamed.
He can touch the rim on his knees.
See, here's the thing, though. I know a lot of people said, what I don't like is that in the last few minutes, they didn't, you got to almost, in some instances, force it down there.
Mm.
But what they didn't do, which frustrated me a little bit, was that he made the right decisions, because every time he got the ball and they double, you're not supposed to go through the double. You're 7-4. Mm-hmm. He's not agile.
Mm-hmm.
He's there to do one thing. Get inside the paint, seal, and get easy baskets. If he doesn't do that, when they double you, you got to pass it. And he made the right decisions. Other guys didn't knock down shots.
No, they didn't.
And also, they didn't do a good job of spacing the floor enough. I didn't understand. Like, there were so many things I didn't understand about that game that were mind-boggling to me. But I really wanted to tip the cap to Tobin Anderson of Fairleigh Dickinson, mm-hmm. because he called his shot, and he knew stylistically his team had a chance because of how they played. That's why yesterday when they played FAU, I was like, I don't know, because stylistically, they were the same team. They wanted to play similarly. Whereas in that first round matchup against Purdue, it was like, okay, we can beat them by playing our style and by upping the tempo. And then they had a great strategy of how they wanted to defend Zach Edey.
Yeah, Tobin Anderson definitely would be one of my winners. I got that audio clip too, but shoot your shot, walk the walk, and he did, and that was their Super Bowl. And you know what? Purdue Boilermakers, see you never. But that was one of the best worst viewing experiences this week. I was watching that. Then obviously Cinderella Princeton,
mm-hmm.
taking down number 2 Arizona, then number 7 Missouri. Like, they might be the story of your Cinderellas, but maybe not lovable, because everyone's like, oh, it's Princeton.
And they only have a 6 seed. Like, Creighton's looked really, really good. So I expect Creighton to absolutely smoke them.
It's the Creighton Blue Jays. You got to cheer for them.
Creighton Blue Jays, of
course.
I got them going pretty far, too. So let's, Purdue was the big story for you. I don't know if I really have a big story. I'll give D credit. I thought UConn was terrific, and I wish I'd bet that 16-1. Bama looked great with Brandon Miller. He looks like a great basketball player. But otherwise, I was just like, this thing is kind of wide open, or it's just going to come down to Houston and Alabama, who seem like the only complete teams that are still left here after, like, a lot of the blue bloods went down. So, I don't know. I'm definitely more, I mean, I guess your, like, gaming experience kind of shapes it. Like, I'm in a decent spot in some of these pools. I'm going to be cheering hard for UCLA, but I'm feeling a little dispirited because I didn't think UCLA looked good at all, and I don't think they have any chance of winning. So, I don't know. I think the matchups are going to be good. There'll be some entertainment down the stretch, but it feels like there's going to be a couple just, like, dark holes. Like, some of these games might just be non-competitive, and that kind of sucks when you're in this position.
You never know with March Madness. One thing I feel like we're missing is a massive buzzer beater. So I'm holding hope for something crazy, big buzzer beater to win yet. I don't think we've had that yet, or something significant enough that was like the final dying seconds, not just to cover, but to win.
It's only been gambling-wise the only way we've got that. We haven't had a huge, huge moment. Other than that one huge giveaway, I'm kind of blanking on that. Was that Furman? Furman
earlier.
He
just threw the ball down the court, but a little different. All right, so those are alt parlay of viewing experience this weekend. Maple Leafs, let's go to them. 5-2 win against the Canes with their St. Patrick's Day jerseys on. And then a 5-4 shootout win versus the Senators on a back-to-back with Matt Murray in net. I think we start there. Matt Murray plays against his former team. He gets a video board tribute of a photo.
I missed that.
He just said, welcome back. Just a photo of him. You got kind of a mix.
That's funny. I kind of love the pettiness.
Mixed applause. But Matt Murray defeats his former team, 48 saves and a 9-round shootout. The Maple Leafs were outshot significantly, 52-29. And yes, Matt Murray is now 6 consecutive games allowing 4 or more goals, but he won. Who cares? He's back, baby.
Yeah, he definitely wasn't the problem. How's that for an alt result? Matt Murray, 48 saves in a 9-round shootout. And Alexander Kerfoot, the winner.
It couldn't have been more
in said shootout. Like,
unwritten.
That one definitely went against the script. But yeah, you're right. Even despite, you know, extending that kind of woeful run in terms of multiple goals scored against per game and doing it at probably the worst time if you really, really want to be in the net in game one of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Matt Murray was definitely the star for the Toronto Maple Leafs on Saturday night. There were a couple of decent performances. Kelly Yarncroke, Austin Matthews getting things sorted out on that top line a little bit. But the story really was Matt Murray. And I guess the story to a certain extent was like how, I don't know if outplayed is the right term, but like Ottawa averaging a shot per minute for the first half hour of the game.
I think outplayed is the right word.
I don't know if they got like severely outplayed.
They were out attempted 93-51. They were outshot 52-29. I don't know. To me, that's outplayed.
93 attempts is a lot of
attempts. That's outplayed to me.
Yeah, they definitely were.
Performance of their season.
That's really the story of the weekend. It's kind of the story of March. Because I'm trying to pull something from like from the weekend, what these games look like. And I thought they were awesome on Friday night. A little surprised to see that, like, you know, the score effects were in full effect, where Carolina did dominate in terms of possession and expected goals and all that stuff. And then the next night, and you could kind of like excuse it a little bit, second half of back-to-back, this is Ottawa Super Bowl, all that stuff. They really want to beat Matt Murray. They're going to throw everything they have at him. I get all that. But it was back-to-back games where the numbers weren't particularly kind. I think there's excuses for both in that, what I just mentioned with Ottawa, Super Bowl, but also when you get up early on Carolina and it's kind of fluky, which it kind of was, the goal that went in off Austin Matthews' knee, you get an early lead, you're going to kind of sit on it, and Carolina is going to be one of the teams that can help you sit on it because they're a good defensive team, but also push forward because they're one of the best possession teams going. They're probably going to put up some numbers in the game score and the score effects sort of situation. But this has been the story all of March. I have a pretty damning stat that I pulled from the month of March, basically the feel out process since adding, because March 3rd was the deadline. They had Ryan O'Reilly beforehand, but they've since lost Ryan O'Reilly, of course. So this has been this 11-7, this feel out. Nothing's really settled. Nothing's in stone. Everything's moving around, and Sheldon Keefe's just trying to find his way. But the Maple Leafs are 32 out of 32. In expected goals at 5-on-5 in the month of March. They are the only team under 40% at 39.98. You can round up if you like at 40%. It is still 32 out of 32. If you look at the goal differential, the Leafs in March, +1. Leafs before March, +50. Possession, 27th in March, 9th before March. And then I mentioned the expected goals, 32 out of 32. They were 4th out of 32. At 5-on-5 before March. That. So the results have been there. They're 4-3-1. It's decent. It's fine. Whatever. Solidifying your spot. You just have to
acceptable maybe
keep stay above water and win some games when you can. They've had a tough schedule. Colorado, Carolina. They came back from the West Coast. Like, it hasn't been the easiest run, but this unsettled nature, it doesn't look kind when you look at the underlying data. And if you run too long on 40% expected goals, I guarantee you, you're not going to get the result you want.
That to me is this 11-7 line shuffling, unable to create chemistry, because what changed from before March 3rd to March 3rd? Tell me the last time the Maple Leafs played with set lines before March 3rd. And yeah, we talked a lot about this last week. Oh, you know, it must be hard. We talked to some former players about creating chemistry. Well, there's the numbers to prove that this is difficult. If you're not getting shots or getting opportunities on net, you're just kind of playing on the perimeter. And that's what the Maple Leafs have been doing. And they're trying to figure it out. And I'm going to give some grace to that, because I think once you get some set lines, this trends back in the direction of the powerful offensive team that the Maple Leafs are. But if you're looking for some reason to, or some way to evaluate and quantify zero ability to create chemistry, that to me, that's just
shift to shift to sustainability. That's hard to say. Shift to shift sustainability. That's exactly what it is. If you are unsettled at all times, you can't really put your foot in the ground and continue to do the great things over and over and over again, win shift after shift, because everything is changing and you're in a constant feel out process. And I get this is only temporary, and it's for a reason. They're trying to find the things that they do like out of this 8-to-whatever-game sample it's going to be throughout the month of March. I mean, we just saw new combinations with McCabe and Liljegren, Brody and Hall, Gio sitting, Morgan Riley playing with Luke Shen. How sheltered were those minutes, as we were hypothesizing last week? Like, everything seems to be in flux, and I just don't know how long you can do it or how long you cannot have something set that works and really roll with it. Now, there are things that you're finding out from these games, though, like Cale Yarncroke and Austin Matthews might be something we want to go on with. I don't know if you want to keep a star away from Austin Matthews in the playoffs like they did against Ottawa, where they had Nylander on a third line, Mitch Marner and John Tavares playing together on the second line, and then Cale Yarncroke, Alex Kerfoot, and Austin Matthews rolling on the first line. I don't know if you really want to do that. But in terms of like things that have come up of this, come from this little, or born out of this little eight-game stretch or this little feel-out process, Cale Yarncroke and Austin Matthews clearly have had the best results over that time period, and they look really dangerous together. The difference between Yarncroke and like a Hyman or a Kerfoot or whomever has come before, even Michael Bunting, Cale Yarncroke can shoot the puck. And if Matthews is getting a lot of attention and that leaves someone else to slide open and actually take meaningful high-danger looks, you kind of want that to be Yarncroke if you're going to choose from any of the depth pieces the Maple Leafs have.
He's emerged as a serious top six winger, and Austin Matthews wants to play with Cale Yarncroke, and he said this in the media, and you know his words have a lot of weight. He's your superstar, reigning Hart Trophy winner. We have a quote post-game just about playing with Yarncroke, but if your superstar is giving him a lot of praise and validation, I think you stick with it.
Yeah, he's a great player. I mean, he's you know, just so sneaky good at so many things, and so smart, gets into great spots all over the ice, not just in the offensive zone. And, you know, just a really easy guy to play with, and obviously, you know, his release is it's one of the prettiest releases I've seen, in a long time, and it's a lot of fun watching him get the puck off, and obviously he was feeling it tonight with a couple of good goals.
And in that quote, he doesn't say the specific part that I was alluding to. Sheldon Keefe says it in a different quote, where Austin felt strongly about continuing to play with Cale Yarncroke, basically requesting that we keep this together. He's enjoying playing with him. Clearly, he can shoot the puck, and he's got one of the prettiest releases he's ever seen. But if it's working, you're keeping one of your top guys happy. I like it. Keep it. He's earned it, too.
And it feels like, well, they don't necessarily have to play with Mitch Marner, but doesn't it feel like Mitch should play with those two? Because two of the best shots that the Leafs have from a scoring perspective.
Pretty dangerous.
It's and you probably want your best setup man choosing between those two guys to make sure that you're getting good looks from your two ace shooters or two of your emerging ace shooters if you want to lump Cale Yarncroke into that mix. However, there's still concerns of where that leaves you. I mean, if you want to look at someone who's emblematic of the struggles in March, look no further than John Tavares. Look no further, honestly, than William Nylander. William Nylander's had his moments, but it has not been a particularly strong month for those two. It hasn't really been a strong month for anyone but Yarncroke and Matthews, if you really dig into it. I just don't know where it leaves you if you play Yarncroke, Matthews, and Marner together, because then you're going back to the exact same thing that it was last year and the year before, where you can't sort it out with Nylander, Tavares, and, say, Alex Kerfoot.
I still feel like there's that valve of Ryan O'Reilly that maybe Sheldon Keefe is just keeping in his back pocket. We're not going to see him until maybe like a couple more weeks at least, I think. And we have Matthew Nyes, who's now going to be, they just set the bracket for the Frozen Four. And, you know, he could be a week or two away from joining this team.
But more experimentation, right?
And that's the thing. Is like, so do you want them to just experiment this whole way? No. But do you want to set something up so solidified now that now it's harder to put puzzle pieces in? Like, I don't really know. You know you have two question marks just waiting in the sidelines. So if you set these lines as rigidly as maybe we want, then you have to do the experiment process again in 2 to 3 weeks.
Okay. Well,
which I'm fine with. That's what I would prefer.
You're going to have to do a little bit of it, but they got to start installing the things that are working. And I hope it starts with Yarncroke and Matthews.
So like I'm completely in agreement. I'd like to see those guys get a little bit of run. This whole time we've been talking about play some people back-to-back times with the same pairings or with the same line, because a little bit of chemistry is going to make such a difference. You just told me the stats about how awful their performance has been in terms of creating opportunities and creating shots on net and high danger chances. Like, you can't continue to run that level of like just scraping by, getting outplayed. Like, good thing Matt Murray stood on his head, because you lose that one to Ottawa and you're outshot and played that poorly. It's not a great taste in your mouth. Like, this is a team that you shouldn't be losing to. The Ottawa Senators, glad they got the win. Glad they got both of those wins. But I think another thing that I took from this weekend was Keefe was clearly okay with sitting Gio, and maybe we see a little bit more rest on the stretch from some of the top guys. That was his first game of the entire season that the oldest guy in the league got a night off, and that is really important when it comes to getting everyone geared up for the playoffs. So right now, this stretch of time, yes, there's going to be maybe some more line configuration, but what else can we glean from it? Hey, who's going to be your starting goaltender? But also, can we get some of these top guys and these guys that have played a lot of minutes some rest? I'm glad I saw Gio get some time to himself, and Samsonov as well wasn't even on the road trip because his wife's having a baby and he's got a little ailments was the word. So acknowledging that you might have some rest down the stretch, that I'm completely okay with that. And maybe that started with John Tavares not playing that last week where he took some time off. Maybe it's just like, hey, if we can do this, everybody can have
a
tiny
little
time
up,
off.
We got enough bodies right now.
Let's just give someone a night off. So
I will say,
my
take home from Gio's absence, though, is kind of need Gio.
Like, that's why you got to sit him out once in a while here.
Yeah, I mean, he's pretty, pretty important. I mean, yeah, they still had like a capable top six with Luke Shen coming in, playing more recently after getting back from the birth of his new child. But
everybody's pregnant.
Well, what happened 9 months ago? What was going on?
Nothing.
In the midst of vacations in the offseason? Makes some sense. Brody and Hall, though, they got absolutely worked against Ottawa. I don't know if Liljegren works because I think McCabe's almost too important to play with Liljegren because you might be asking too much of him. I don't know. It feels like everything is still way up in the air. Mm-hmm. But again, it feels like now with about 12 or 13 games left, kind of have to start installing things that work.
Yep.
Things you count on, things you want to see more of, things you think you can build on. It's time to start putting those things in because I don't think you can just like randomize her before the game and just try and take notes off it. Like some of these pairings and lines have to form some meaningful chemistry because you're going to get the results where you're just chasing games or you're chasing underlying data because you're just not even close. 40% expected goals, not going to get you anywhere in the playoffs. Small sample, you can overcome it. Long sample, and 7-game series is long enough, 40% is not going to get it done.
So you got the Islanders tomorrow, Panthers Thursday, and Hurricanes Saturday, all three of them on the road. Oh, and Nashville Sunday. So they got 4 games all on the road before coming back home. Definitely some winnable games there and definitely some opportunity to create some more chemistry, get some lines solidified. I'm not sure about Achari's return to play here.
I think it was more precautionary. Yeah. I don't know if they said no concussion,
but they're definitely alluding
to that.
That was tough, though.
I think that was kind of the Tavares mold where it's just like, let's give it 24 hours at least, get him back in there. You can miss him a little bit too. Pretty important guy in the bottom six. I don't know what Jesse Puljujärvi's doing on that play. He's a strange, strange player. But anyway, it was 3 points, 3 of 4. It's good. And it's just like, how is it good? Is it as good as it looks? And then when you really dig into it, there's some warts here. There's some things they got to clean up, and they got 13 games to do it.
I feel like every time we get a chance to see Bobby McMahon, I remember that they got some good in the Marlies waiting, and that's a nice feeling because who knows what's going to happen this offseason if you're able to, you know, keep the whole gang together. But I think he's on the cusp of being a player that can really impact this Maple Leafs roster. Maybe it's next season halfway through, but I really like Bobby McMahon.
I don't know what the odds would be that he'd play night one for the Maple Leafs next year.
I think at the playoffs, zero.
No, he's not playing the playoffs. Well, he might get a couple games if they really need him for out of desperation purposes. But I'm almost positive he will be in the lineup.
I like him a lot.
To start next season.
He's been good. And Joe Wall, he got an opportunity to back up. Obviously, he didn't play, but there's some good feeling about
he might be there too.
Some of the young or in the wings Marlies that might make an impact on this Maple Leafs roster. All right, anything else from Leafs before we move to Raptors?
No, I don't think so.
All right, so Raptors 112-107 win and a 118-111 loss. So last night this is the most recent, they lost the Bucks last night on a back-to-back on the road against the best team in the NBA. I think you have a little bit less positives to take from this game, or you have a little bit more of like a disappointing feeling from.
No, not really.
It says disappointing loss in Milwaukee.
Yeah, it's disappointing only because they were the better team for 3 quarters, I thought. Mm-hmm. Or at least game.
No, they certainly were.
Toe-to-toe with a team like Milwaukee. It was like, wow, this turning a corner, getting this win, how big would that be? Get to 500 for the first time in what feels like forever.
I honestly don't know last time they were at 500.
Match the Atlanta Hawks for 8th in the conference. Like, how much of a morale boost that would be. Mm-hmm. And then you just start the fourth quarter off so woefully because Freddie's not on the floor to start and you're not hitting shots and Will Barton's a mess, with all respect to Will Barton, like it has not been, his minutes have not been overly positive lately, but it's really because Scotty Barnes was injured and left the game and you couldn't hold over those guard minutes. Your guard depth continues to be exposed. And even when Fred did get back in, he started to turn the ball over and that was it. It just seemed like, okay, one team had the ability. One team was like doing everything they could to put their best foot forward, to be in that game with Milwaukee. And then Milwaukee's just like, okay, we're fourth quarter now. It's time to turn it on. And they just absolutely took off to start the fourth quarter. It was disappointing to see that sort of collapse because I feel like that game could have meant a lot.
I still think I take a lot from it, and I'm not a fan of moral victories. I think I've made fun of us and this market sometimes with the Raptors as of late for finding moral victories. But last night is still one for me because the Raptors are on a back-to-back with travel against the league best Bucks, who are 22-3 in the last five games. Giannis shot 100%. 100%. Yep. And the Raptors held it.
OG did another great job.
He sure did.
I mean, the problem is the 100% is unfortunate.
100%.
But he only took 9 shots. This is like the Jokic thing where he only took 8 shots. You're like, if you limit Giannis to only taking 9 shots, it's pretty positive.
For sure.
He was just very selective, and he was selecting the right shots to take.
And the Raptors are playing some of the best basketball that they have been in a while. We're going to talk to Michael Grange at 8 o'clock. Good to catch up with him, especially after his Shea article the other day, comparing him and Steve Nash. I'm excited to talk about that. But also just about the Raptors maybe in this four-game stretch, where they go 3-1. They've put together some really strong performances led by some consistency with Fred VanVleet, even Pascal turning a little bit of a corner, Fred mostly being the story. But I feel like last night, yes, it would have been a hell of a victory. Might have been their best victory of the season if they were able to manage it.
Mm-hmm.
But I still feel like there's a lot of positives to glean from this. It was one of those scheduled losses, right? A back-to-back against Milwaukee on the road.
Yeah.
100%, I would have been overjoyed for them to win that. I still find some things that make me feel promise about that. Precious Achiuwa back in there, and he's not leading the notes that I have, but he was benched, or he wasn't played last week, right?
He got a DND last week, only played 3 minutes against the Timberwolves.
And it looked like
Saturday
he has something
night
to prove. And he's not the one that's going to drive this team into a play-in, but you're looking for any level of depth. The Raptors have been struggling to find that. I'm happy to see that maybe Precious got a little awakening, because you can't just have your starters be the only people contributing. So, you know, baby steps. Precious needs to find some way to impact this team. He got in there. He played a little better last night. I'm curious to ask Michael Grange about what the outlook, like, what do we need for Precious Achiuwa to make this a successful stretch? Because he can't just be a non-factor or a negative on this team, because he's better than that. He's such an athlete. He's a guy that I think the Raptors really want to build in their future. He's one of their best prospects, but he has been up and down this season, mostly down as of late. So I really want to see what Precious can do down the stretch, because ever since Jakob Poeltl has joined this team, he's kind of been floating. He's had really no level of impact. So he got his DND, and now maybe he's like, hey, I got to pick this up. So
I don't know if he only got in because of Barnes' absence, but the repercussions are twofold when Barnes comes out, because it forces Precious, I think, into your front court, or like more minutes maybe than Nick Nurse had outlined for him. He only played 3 Saturday night.
Grasp that.
But
he came
in and he played really well. It's twofold because it you know, forces Precious in, but also you don't have that backup point guard, which Scotty's been doing for a lot of the year. So Precious answering the bell was huge. It kept them in the game, but ultimately they didn't have the other side of the equation in the fourth quarter.
So just for people, Scotty Barnes left because of a wrist injury. X-rays were negative.
Were negative, yeah.
He's going to be reevaluated. We'll have those
Still
updates today.
Not something that they need right now, because his absence looms very, very large for multiple reasons. But I will say, I felt like it was sort of a ceiling game, and maybe a second half of the back ceiling game, where the Raptors, that's what you could be. You could be the team that pushes Milwaukee a little bit. That's really annoying for Milwaukee in a first round series. Like, that's kind of where I see the Raptors topping out. Like, they can play with Milwaukee, even in Milwaukee. They can be in that game, and maybe it all comes down to just Barnes not being there is the difference in the end, and it allows Milwaukee to pull through. I thought they played really, really well, and they showed that there's probably easily one of the 8, 9, 10 best teams in the Eastern Conference. And I know that's not a hot take because that's exactly where they stand. But I feel like they could, they do belong. They do belong where they are. They've been playing better than their record indicates for a while now since getting Jakob Poeltl in. When they put it all together, they can be a dangerous team, but it is flimsy. Like one mm-hmm. Jenga piece and it kind of collapses down. And that Jenga piece in a lot of ways was Scotty Barnes last night, because their depth, it really is what sort of undoes a lot of the progress that they can make, because the depth last night really showed that they just didn't have enough of it in that meaningful spot to start the fourth quarter. And that's going to be the problem that they continue to run in. But when you squint hard and you have that five, the starting five, and a couple bench pieces coming off that are fully formed and ready to contribute, yeah, they can put it together decently well. But again, you lose a Scotty Barnes in the second half in Milwaukee, it's going to be tough to overcome that, and ultimately they couldn't.
So 10 games left, 5 on the road. Raptors have been really, really good at home, like crazy good at home. They're currently 9th. You said half a game back of Atlanta. We'll look at the schedule here because there's some really important and critical games down the stretch that are winnable that could really make a difference between them getting this opportunity to play in for what or not. Nick Nurse was asked about this post game, and he's in the same boat, feeling good about the game, about the team, but also aware of what needs to happen in the next 10 games.
Yeah, I mean, this is it's you know, all these games are important to us, that's for sure. I like kind of how we're playing though. I think we're playing very well for long stretches of games. Hopefully we can just keep building on that and get some rest now after this tough back-to-back. Get some rest here for a couple days in between games, and then get ready to get back to work and see if we can keep improving. That's it. I think all the games mean a lot, and they're all the same, right? Everyone we can pick off will help us, get into that playoff chase or get into the playoffs. So we need to get our rest and get ready to go. But I like the direction we're heading.
So they get a couple days off here before the Raptors play back at home against the Pacers on Wednesday and Friday against the Pistons. And then also Sunday at home. So they get a little bit of time, and they got 3 or 4 home games in a row here. Pacers, Pistons, Wizards, and Heat.
All of which are winnable.
Let's say they go three or four.
They might be favorites in all 4 of those games.
3 or 4. And that's totally doable. And the fact that you're playing so good at home, 3 or 4. The final stretch, however, is a lengthy road trip against the Sixers, 2 against the Charlotte Hornets.
Winnable.
2 against the Celtics. And then back home against Milwaukee.
The hope there is that the Celtics and Bucks That's have figured right. things out and are resting for the playoffs.
So if those last 3 games, let's say the Celtics, and the Bucks, April 5th, 7th, and 9th, are already kind of aware of where they're at. They don't need to, no one's trying to play for something. Just mm-hmm. rest them, guys. The Raptors get 1 or 2 out of those. I think there's a real serious chance that they can move up the standings, 8th. I don't know how attainable 7th is, but... like, they're not out of this, but they have to capitalize on these next 4 games at home. Like, no doubt about it. If you don't go 3 or 4 at home here against these winnable games, I don't really know how confident you feel that with those big road trip games looming.
Yeah, 3.5 back of Miami for 7th. So it's unlikely
and
that
they play
they're
Miami,
be hosting.
They,
yeah, so that's they could pull that between 2.5, but they'll still need a lot of help, you would expect, to get up to 7th. But 8th seems imperative, only a half game out of 8th. Mm-hmm. And honestly, the way that they've been playing... the way Fred and OG in particular have been playing. I mean, OG shooting right now, paired with his defense.
Yep.
We're talking about, again, elite two-way contribution.
8 for 12
from him.
Yesterday, 4 for 5 from 3.
He's basically not missing from beyond the arc of late. And I think Fred's been so, so good. It's just the hope, again, is Barnes going to be all right? Because when you have all these pieces firing, which they have been, Poeltl playing the way he's been playing, Siakam's bouncing back a little bit, but Fred and OG have really shone the last little while. If those guys have that mix, they're really dangerous, and the expectation should be that they come out of the play-in and get into the Eastern Conference bracket.
There's certainly a chance. We'll tee all this up with Michael Grange at 8. We always have Frank Saravelli Monday mornings at 7. In between that, we'll do winners and losers. Lots to talk about. Between all that, we also have the Wake and Rake to set up. That's no Toronto sports tonight, but you got the World Baseball Classic, Mexico and Japan at 7 p.m. Of course, March Madness is in full swing. The men's NCAA hockey bracket is set. We can take a look at that, see how our buddy Matthew Nyes is faring. Lots of tea up there. So send in your picks of 590, 590. On the other side of the break, we're going to do the A-list. Keep today going.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Now it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
All right, lots from the A-list. Also, lots for winners and losers, which will be at 7:30. Okay. The World Baseball Classic, as we just talked about, has been an absolute treat. It may be a surprising treat for us because we don't really know what to expect. We don't see it every year, and Canada didn't have the prolific showing that we had hoped for, but there's been lots of great baseball being played. Our buddy John Morosi had a good tweet, of course. He's all over the beat. Over 1,010,999 fans have attended the World Baseball Classic in the pool tournament, nearly doubling the previous high of 500,000 people, which was 6 years ago. More than the Oakland A's had all season long in their attendance.
A million fans didn't go through the gates in Oakland?
More people have gone to the World Baseball Classic so far than went to the Oakland Athletics all season long. 788,000 people went to A's games, and we're at over a million at WBC World Pool Play only. So imagine, this was even before semis and finals, obviously, right around the corner. But, man, last year, the Oakland A's took a beating in terms of media stuff. And sorry to bring it back in here, buddy, but we're starting off the season with already some Oakland A's slander.
Apparently it's more than the Miami Marlins as well, and it's in Miami.
It's funny that they only talk about the A's, though.
The A's 100,000 less than Miami. I'm on ESPN.com looking at 2022 attendance. 907,000 for Miami. The leader? 3.86 million for the Dodgers.
Nice.
I actually thought it would... I don't know why I thought it'd be a little bit higher, but I mean, they sell out. I'm sure that's like close to the max that they can get. A million, though, that's pretty impressive then, because we're talking 82 games for Oakland, 81 games, I guess, for Oakland, Miami, a bunch of teams that are just over a million. That's pretty impressive. And I guess I don't really doubt it because it looks rowdy. It looks jam packed. It looks fun. John Morosi probably loved tweeting that out. He loves the world. I love that he loves the World Baseball Classic as much as he does.
One last one here. So we talked about Guinness Book of World Records. I think it was last week. Some guy did a plank challenge for a long time. Chin-ups as well. You have your buddy that did the world burpees challenge.
My buddy, burpeed himself into oblivion.
An Australian set a new Guinness World Record after surfing for 40 straight hours, catching 700 plus waves.
That's funny.
40 straight hours, 700 plus waves.
Have you ever surfed?
I have surfed. Mm-hmm. Well, I attempted. It's not easy. I was in Indonesia.
Right.
And you could just go and be like, hey, you're on the beach and there's some guy with a surf hut. We went up and rented it. And I barely stood up. This was also 1 year removed from hip surgery, so I didn't have much stability. And so I stood up once, and the waves are like baby waves. I'm not going out to anywhere further than 50 yards from shore.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really fun, and you feel like a badass. Like, you're just paddling out there with your arms. Like, you look like you're in the movie. You try to stand up, you fall. Surfing must be one of the hardest things I've ever tried.
It's exhausting.
And it is exhausting. I was out there for maybe half an hour, and I'm like, I'm gassed.
Like, you're working hard when you're doing it. Now, if you're good at it, it's a breeze to jump up on the board.
Have you surfed?
It's probably, it's hard and it's taxing. And, you know, you're not very good at it. But just like getting up a couple times is like, it's a legitimate workout. And this guy did it, 40 straight hours?
40 straight hours, 700 plus waves.
He's popping up and it's nothing to him. I bet the burpees are harder because it's just longer, but that's a long time to do anything.
Just to be awake.
And he deserves multiple crispy ones for that effort.
Big time. The previous record was 30 hours, so he didn't just beat it for a little bit. He
wanted to make this stand the test of time.
You're not beating this record for a long time.
He's just having fun out there.
He was having a blast. I'd be a little bit afraid of sharks. Quick text in the text line asking if you saw the MLB attendance things open. What was Toronto's last year?
Toronto was seventh, I was going to mention. 2.653 million, only behind Houston, San Diego, Atlanta, the Yankees,
wow,
the Cardinals, and Dodgers. That's
elite
stuff.
Seventh in the entire MLB.
50,000 more than the Boston Red Sox.
That's awesome.
The Jays are...
And this year's going to be even more because they've got those $20 tickets to the out. You just hang out wherever you want.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a blast. And once they got Looney Dogs in there and people are filling the seats, that's how you do it. All right, we're going to take a break because we have Frank Saravalli on the other side, winners and losers, and then Michael Grange before the Wake and Rake, sending your picks at 590, 590 on the Fan Morning Show.